So, leading into this week's Torah portion, Genesis 4 starts off with a simple thing. We're actually going to go back to it, where Cain allows sin in, and it builds up such a frustration and aggravation in him that that frustration and aggravation, which should be centered upon himself, right? He focuses all on Abel. And so instead of stoning out the bad parts within him, getting rid of killing the flesh that's within him, he goes and kills Abel. And that's where this chapter starts. And you're going, my goodness, but that's not the Torah portion, but it's leading into. And just in chapter 4, you start off with the death of a son. And I'm going to read the end of chapter 4, verse 25. And Adam knew his wife again. And she bore a son, and she named him Seth. For God had appointed another seed for me instead of Abel, that Cain killed. And for Seth, to him also was a son born, and he named him Enosh. And men began to call on the name of Yahweh. Beginning in a chapter, death, murder, sin brought in. End of the chapter, a new son given to replace the son that was killed. Intriguing. And because the son is born, men begin to call upon Yahweh. Now, as we know Scripture and we know our own life, we love to say, and it went, and they lived happily ever after. But that's not the case. Do we truly believe that the enemy is going to sit back and watch this continue to build? Continue to let men call upon Yahweh? No. Even if he has to break part of a judgment. I'm reading from Genesis chapter 3, verse 14. This is the punishment of the serpent. Because you have done this, you are cursed more than any cattle, more than every beast of the field. On your belly you shall go, and you shall eat dust all the days of your life. Verse 15, very important. I will put enmity. This means distance, frustration, aggravation. Between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed, and he shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. There shall be enmity. This is meant to be separation between the woman and Hasatan, and his seed. Well, that would lead us into chapter 6, where the sons of God come down to what? The women of men. These are angelic beings. This is not Yahweh's will in regard to what he wants for his holiness. And they break the enmity between the seed of the woman and Hasatan himself. And guess what? From a world that was all calling on the name of Yahweh, now Yahweh goes, my spirit will not strive with man forever. And now he has to bring the flood. He has to bring the flood. So from, wow, glorious mountaintop, all the way back down into the valley again. And Yahweh goes, you know what? As he always does, I'll start over. And what does he do? He finds one righteous man. The man's name means rest. And maybe that's what makes him righteous. Because to rest in the presence or just the reality of Yahweh means we have faith. Shabbat is a lesson we are taught every week in regard to our faith. I need you to stop thinking about the to-do list in your life. I need you to forget about having, what am I going to cook tonight? What am I going to prepare? That your day is not focused on just being able to live another day. And I want you to sit back and realize that you're not really in control anyway. I am. Rest. We go, wow, we're way back. He took one branch, right? Noah's branch. He broke it off. The rest of the tree's gone, right? This one branch goes out. And what do we find? We find that Noah has now got a wonderful vineyard. Sounds like the garden again. Noah hasn't had a drink in a long time. I have no doubt Noah's sitting back going, how long do I need to wait on those grapes? The first opportunity we see in that vineyard, he drinks and drinks and drinks and becomes drunk. And in the midst of being drunk, what happens again? Sin enters. Now, that's where we're going to start a PowerPoint. This actually is the reality of starting from last week. But to eliminate the confusion on the website going, sin lies at the door too, but I don't see anywhere else in the site where it says sin lies at the door. I just call it sin lies at the door. Now, the other phrase used is that we need to rule over sin. Now, you know what? We do not do a very good job of that. We quite often are more passive with sin. Well, sin may be entering the camp, but it's only slightly in the camp. What's the big deal? But Yahweh tries to teach us, no, we have to hold a line, because you give it an inch, it will take a mile. It'll probably take more than that. So that leads us back to Genesis 4, 6 through 7. Now, I'm going to apologize now. This is a massive amount to undertake today, conceptually. And if I need to stop at some point, I'll stop and say, I call it for today and we'll finish another day with whatever I have up there. So we'll start with Genesis chapter 4, 6 through 7. So Yahweh said to Cain, why are you angry? Why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Now, same thing as last week. We talked about lies meant to lie down and stretch out to wait. We talked about the door was an entrance or an opening. Think about it in regard to any change in your life, a portal to any change in your life, change in habits, change of what's going on. The desire was a craving, a longing of a beast to devour. And you know what? I spoke of this last week as that lion who has not eaten. I think about it as the moment Daniel was taken out of the pit and the advisors were put at the entrance of the pit to be thrown in, that sin. Because it says of the bodies of those men that they didn't even hit the ground. Did not even hit the ground. But sin is not always scary. Sin may be, oh, you've opened the door. Well, why don't you come out? I've got a few things to show you. You know what? That seems a little heavy. Will you let me carry that? That seems heavy too. You keep carrying all these words around. Don't you realize that these words are heavy and they restrict you? Give them to me and I'll give you freedom. We're supposed to rule or exercise dominion. We don't do a very good job of this. We struggle with this. Going back to Genesis. I'm really focusing on 7. And you will do not well. Sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Now, I took you back to Matthew chapter 12 in regard to the casting out of the demons. And it said, this is 27 to 29, "And if I cast out demons by Beelzebub, by whom do your sons cast them out? Therefore they will be your judges. But I cast out demons by the Spirit of Elohim. Surely the kingdom of Elohim has come upon you. Or how can one enter a strong man's house and plunder his goods unless he first binds the strong man, and then he will plunder his house?" Now, the point I brought up last time was the idea of how do you bind the strong man? I brought up multiple verses that through Yahweh's word, we are made strong. And Yahweh continued to encourage us, be strong. And I think there's a reason for that, because you know what? Whenever he's sending us in for a test, he's saying, be of good courage, be strong. Why? Because it's going to test your strength. It's going to test your fortitude. It's going to test everything in you to be able just to hold on through this. Be strong. Hold on. But you know, Luke actually has another rendering of this parable. And instead of goods, there's a different word. So that's Luke chapter 11, 20 through 21. It says this, "But if I cast out demons with the finger of Elohim, surely the kingdom of Elohim has come upon you." Now listen to this. "When a strong man, fully armed, guards his own palace, his goods are in peace." Verse 22 and 23. "But when a stronger than he comes upon him and overcomes him, he takes from him all his" what? "Armor in which he is trusted and divides his spoils. He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters." So some of the goods that the enemy is after are your armor. The things you seek or you hold on or that protect you. These could be good or bad. They could be your protections. Oh, I trust in these walls made of stone. Guess what? Those stone walls are going to fall. But if we trust in Yahweh, He gives us protections. He gives us an armor. And that's what I want to focus on today, is that armor. Before we get to that, I wanted to bring in Deuteronomy 11:8. It says this, "Therefore you shall keep or protect every commandment which I command you today, that you may be strong and go in and possess the land which you cross over to possess." Now, this is very specific. If I take it in very general sense, you know what? What Yahweh is saying is, you must protect every command. Why? Because I have plans for you, and you will not enter in the completeness of those plans unless you protect every command. Because the commands are actually going to give you strength through this test. Isaiah 59:13-14. "In transgressing and lying against Yahweh," and the hard part with some of this, and I'm going to stop for a moment, is I got verses that tie and connect that are like 20 slides away. I wish I could like just jump back and forth the whole time. But to make a point, linearly, A plus B, some of them, the connections will come later. One of them is this idea of lying against Yahweh and departing from Elohim. I don't know how you put it way back in the back of your mind. We're going to come back to that. Speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and uttering from the heart words of falsehood. Justice is turned back and righteousness stands far off. For truth is fallen in the street and equity cannot enter. Verse 15. So truth fails and he departs from evil, makes himself prey. Then Yahweh saw it and it displeased him that there was no justice. He saw that there was no man and wondered that there was no intercessor. Therefore, his own arm brought salvation for him, and his own righteousness, it sustained him. For he put on righteousness as a what? Breastplate. And a helmet of salvation on his head. And he put on garments of vengeance for clothing and was clad with zeal as with a cloak. Verse 21. As for me, says Yahweh, this is my covenant with them. My spirit who is upon you and my words which I put in your mouth shall not depart from your mouth, nor from the mouth of your descendants, nor from the mouth of your descendants. Descendants, says Yahweh, from this time and forevermore. Now, I want you to make a point that Yahweh looked down and there was no intercessor. No one to even consider praying or putting their life on a line to help someone else. That goes back to the commandment of loving our neighbor. Well, if you love them, then you're willing to actually stick your neck out for them. To pray for them every day, to help them. There was none, so Yahweh says, you know what? I'll do it. It's like the parent that goes, the skateboard's still in the middle living room. And they go, you know what? I could try and teach a lesson again, but right now someone could get hurt. I'm going to go put it away. Same thing. Isaiah is the springboard for Ephesians. That's Ephesians chapter 6, starting with verses 10 through 12, talking about the armor of God. Finally, my brethren, be strong. Man, he keeps saying that. Be strong in Yahweh, in the power of his might, and put on the whole armor of Elohim. Now, whose armor is it? Elohim's. That you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Just like the idea of the sons of God coming down to the women of men, we struggle with not only the sin that lies within us, but the sin that is around us, tempting us every moment. Ephesians 6, 13 through 15. It says this, therefore take up the whole armor of Elohim, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand, stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. 16:18. Above all, taking the shield of faith, with which you will be able to quench all the darts of the wicked one, and take the helmet of salvation, and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of Elohim, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints. Notice this point speaking about praying how often?
Always.
And you know what? Here's a reality. We religious folk love to use these religious words. And I think to some degree the enemy loves us to use these religious words. Because we say, pray always. Oh, okay. Yahweh's saying, speak to him always. We need to throw off the religiosity of the reality of these words and realize that what he's saying is stay in contact with Yahweh always with no exception. He is your general and commander, and you can't get the orders without him. Perseverance and supplication. Notice that point. We saw in Isaiah, the supplication for the saints. Who is going to be an intercessor for them? Who's going to stand up for them? Cool picture. Except one problem. You know, I went looking for a picture. In fact, I went lots of pictures about the armor of God. And you know what? There were huge numbers of pictures. Do you know that every one of them had a crusade symbol on them? Very huge crusade symbol on them. To be honest, I wasn't going to put this picture on here. Part of the inside of me felt sick about the reality of that here is a scriptural concept of Yahweh putting on the armor of God, and you have a crusade symbol of which was used to kill his people on his shield, on his sword, on his belt of truth. Even on some of the helmets. Now, I don't think they meant it, but you know what? I think the enemy did. So I had to make my own. Well, and it wasn't easy, because you know, finding a shield that's not like got pagan symbols on it and everything else. We're going to start with that. The shield of faith. Now, Paul brings it up. It's not quoted in Isaiah. I'm going, so where's it come from? What's Paul thinking? I think this is where he was thinking. Genesis 15:1. It says this. After these things, the word of Yahweh came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not be afraid, Abram, I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward." This is what Yahweh says. After, by the way, he said, leave your father's house, go out to a country you don't know with a bunch of marauders, with your family, and by the way, go out there by yourself. But I'll be your shield. But he doesn't say that till he gets there. It goes on from there. Verses 5 to 6. Then he brought him outside, and he said, "Look now toward the heaven, and count the stars if you're able to count them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." And he what? Believed in Yahweh, and it was accounted to him in righteousness. So here's what it was. Yahweh is our shield. And part of that is based on the reality of us actually believing what he says. Isn't faith nothing more than saying, Yahweh, you said that's going to happen, I believe it. Well, guess what? Remember it said obey every commandment? Well, if we don't obey his voice, then we're not strong. Then guess what happens to our shield? It goes away. Because as we walk away from Yahweh, Yahweh goes, you know what? Walk away. You'll be the one wanting to come back. You see, a lot of people think of the curses as Yahweh going to heaven going, all right, Angels, get ready. Stage two. Go. Personal opinion, I don't see it that way. What I see Yahweh doing is, you know what? I'll let you walk away, but every so often when you walk away, you're further from my presence and there's another level of protection that you just walked away from. Because in his presence is complete protection and complete blessings. But if you're going to walk away, there are boundaries. I just walked past that boundary. Well, guess what? You don't have him to protect this, this, and this anymore. You walk out of his protection. He is no longer your shield. So it has some correlation to faith. Is Yahweh our shield? Then how does it apply to faith? Believing in Yahweh's voice, Yahweh becomes or is our shield. But you have to believe his voice. So here's our breastplate. Now, here's another thing I was considering. Why, I mean, we see warfare going on in Torah, but we don't see any of this in regard to a breastplate and all of these things. And I sit back and go, why don't I see it in Torah? And then part of me wondered, well, what if I did? And I just didn't realize it. Because you see, we're actually thinking of this in a physical sense, right? This would be a physical breastplate for physical armor, right? But what would a spiritual breastplate look like? What would it look like? And I thought back to Isaiah 59. And it says, the whole goal here is that there was no what? Intercessor. And he put on righteousness as a breastplate. Because he wanted to come down for us, right? So that made me think of this. Maybe this is our breastplate of righteousness. The point being is maybe we're all called to be this intercessor. You see, every stone on the breastplate was a treasured stone and it represented another tribe. And it had to be put so it was over the heart. This is part of the command. So that from the love of the individual, they would look down and they would see, from their perspective, looking down, that each of these tribes was a treasure to Yahweh. And let's be honest, what intercession is when we see in someone else that they're a treasure. And we want to pray for them and hold them up and care for them and support them in times of trouble. Now I tied that to Exodus 19, 5 through 6. It's a loose connection, but I think it still works. Now therefore, if you indeed, what? Obey my voice and keep my covenant, protect. Then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people. From all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. So if we're going to be called to be a kingdom of priests, then that seems to me that to be part of our job, specifically in this spiritual warfare. Helmet of salvation. This is quoted in Isaiah. And I wonder if it's actually meant to tie to Exodus 13, 16. Now, we're going to read this in a minute. This verse deals with the Feast of Passover. Or it's not Feast. Passover. Passover is when Yahweh goes in and says, you know what, you guys are kind of in a predicament. You gave yourselves over to this enemy, my enemy, in this case, Pharaoh. And I've got to free you. I have to save you. So here's a simple thing. I'm going to give you a few commands. Get a lamb, bring it to your house, live in your house, kill it, put his blood on the doorposts. When you come out, I'm going to save you. He's testing also whether you're going to obey, right? He's giving you his voice. To that, it says that Passover, it shall be a sign on your hand and frontlets between your eyes, for by strength of the hand of Yahweh we were brought out of Egypt. Passover is all about salvation. Some helmets will actually come down where you have that piece right down between your eyes. And this point of a helmet of salvation is a point that Yahweh has saved you. And actually, salvation is a just like the shield, but it's actually surrounding your mind. Now, we sit back and go, oh, it's surrounding my mind. What's the big deal? But your mind is your heart. The meditations of my heart. You know what? David was not thinking, beep, beep, boom, 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 boom. No, the meditations of his heart, he meant about his mind. Salvation is a protection, a shield for our heart. And that's important. Romans 7:23. But I see another law in my members, another teaching. And it's warring against the law of my what? My mind. And bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. It's constantly trying to get in my mind to take over my heart. I don't know about you, but you know what? I go through seasons where the thoughts come at me like machine gun fire. And I can feel my mental strength starting to weaken. Because it's a constant, no, 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 wrong, lie, lie. Constantly. And I know the enemy just waiting. Come on. He's just waiting for me to finally mentally lose it, give in, and go, you know what, I'm done. But Yahweh goes, no, I need you to just go another day. And when that day is done, he goes, you know what? Just one more day. And then when that's done, just one more day. In some regard, he's actually strengthening our heart. But he's also testing whether that word is so important to you that you're willing to go through this. Are you going to really hold on to it to the end? Things to consider. Salvation is a protection for our mind or our heart. Righteousness is a protection for our heart and soul. It's a breastplate. Faith is a protection for our strength. It's a shield. You shall love Yahweh with all your heart, soul, and strength. And if you do so, then Yahweh's protecting those things with which you love him. He's willing to surround you with himself, give you his armor. The sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. It's Ephesians 6:17. I wanted one that was specifically flaming. I think that's important. I also wanted one that was coming out of the mouth. The closest one I got like that was a Lego figure. And even though it was a Lego figure, there were all these Lego people with the head laying on one side and the red stuff down on the Lego. It wasn't like liquid. It was like Lego. It was supposed to be a Lego scene. And I was like, you know what? If I were a child, that would really freak me out. Because, ooh, Legos! But you know what? Revelation speaks of a sword coming out of the mouth of him who comes to judge. There's a sword used to guard the garden, a flaming sword. Hebrews 4:12. For the word of Elohim is living and powerful. And it's sharper than a two-edged sword, piercing even the division of the soul and the spirit, joints and marrow, discerner of thoughts and intentions of the heart. Now, what's important here is Paul's trying to make a point that your thoughts and your intentions are your joints and your marrow. The joints are the point at which your body, where it does all that wonderful movement, right? Changes. And as we get older, they don't work as well. Right? We don't like to change that much. The marrow is the center of the bone. That goes back to our intentions. So what about, why are we doing, what's changing us, and where does it come from? I can separate that. How often have you sat back praying going, I want to do this, but I don't know why I want to do it. Is it for a good reason or a bad? The Word of God can sort that out. Romans 8:26 and 27. Likewise, the Spirit also helps in our weakness. For we do not know what we should pray for as we ought. But the Spirit Himself makes intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. Now he who searches the heart and knows the mind of the Spirit is, because he makes intercession for the saints according to the will of Elohim. You see, do you realize that that sword is not only there for us to go, you know what? Where's the line? Where's the truth? Oh, there it is! Psh! Cut it. Here's the truth. Here's a lie. They're no longer connected. But that sword is actually there because it's the moving of the Spirit, that the words we speak are just as much that sword. And we can actually use our sword to build people up, or we can use it to destroy them. Swords are also spoken of as what we're going to cut and actually use to break the earth to plant our seed in. Right? How are we? The ground of someone else's heart. Are we actually going in with that sword to break the ground so that his seed can have a place to grow in them? Or are we going in to destroy their heart? Joel 3:10, 11. Listen to this. Beat your plowshares into what? Swords. And your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble and come, all you nations, and gather together all around, because your mighty ones can go down there, Lord. So we don't only have the swords beaten into plowshares. There's a time where the plowshares are meant to be cut and beaten into swords. But they play both purposes. Cultivate the ground to separate truth from the lie. The next thing spoken of is feet fitted with the gospel of peace. Now this actually goes back. This gospel of peace, or the good news of the peace, is merely this. That sin, what brought separation between us and God, enmity, again, that's one of those fancy words. I want to quickly clarify. Me and someone, we have a fight, and so that there's a growing enmity that I don't even want to talk to him. Growing enmity. That's what we have between us and Yahweh. That's what sin creates. But an intercessor, the arm of Yahweh that comes forth to save us from ourselves, it becomes the good news of peace, and that peace is between us and Yahweh. That we're not fighting against Him anymore. We don't have to fight Him. He's now on our side. Things to consider. What good news of shalom? And that was between one who, take away enmity. Take your sandals. That's supposed to be off. I apologize. Take off your sandals in regard to Moses because you're standing on holy ground. Blood was to be put on the big toe of the priest. Blood, blood, blood. Set it apart. Why? Shake the dust from your sandals if you go to a place and they won't listen to the voice of Yahweh. Shake the dust. Get it off. Yeshua says, wash their feet. Do as I've done for you. So something about these sandals and feet deal with dust, and this dust can be the reality of whether we're shaking the dust is getting off that lies and falseness, or someone just won't accept, so you know what, I'm going to put that aside and I have to move on. We'll get back to the connection in a moment. Stand firm then with the belt of truth buckled around your waist. That's Ephesians 6:14. Exodus 12:11, and thus you shall eat it with your what? Belt on your waist, and what? Sandals on your feet, with your staff in your hands, so you eat it in haste. It is Yahweh's Passover. Here's what I get from that. The belt and the sandals are the reality that you're prepared and ready for whatever Yahweh's plan has for you. And if that means to leave, I'm ready to leave. If it means I need to go over here, I'm ready to go over there. The belt and the sandals are preparations. There's some interesting connections here. But I want to talk about how Satan first takes this stuff away from us. Remember when I said at the beginning of this that it talked about those, the lying spirit and departing from Elohim? Remember that? And I said, hold that way back in the back of your head. All right. The question that Satan asks of you is this one that's up here. Did Yahweh lie? Now, he's not going to come out and say that like that. Because when he says it that clear, you just go, no. No way. Is Yahweh keeping something from us? Genesis 3, 4, and 5. Let's actually hear it from his words. But I'm telling you, this is what he's saying. 4 and 5. Then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. For Elohim knows that in the day that you eat it, your eyes will be opened. And you will be like Elohim, knowing good and evil. Yahweh said, if you eat of this tree, you will die. He starts off with, you will not surely die. So what is he really saying? Yahweh lied. How can you trust him? He lied to you. And not only did he lie from you, but he lied to you because Elohim knows that in the day you eat it, you'll be like him. He's keeping you down. You're his servant right now. Same thing. He just said it in fancy words. We go, I need to consider that for a moment. If we're considering it, he's already got a foot in the door. Genesis 3:6, so when the woman saw the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, desirable to make one wise, she took its fruit and ate, and she also gave some to her husband, and he ate. She saw it from his perspective. She believed his words. Guess what? Satan was in the garden, and now he is in our heart. Remember I told you, sin's always waiting at the door? We start this whole thing with the Torah portion. There's Satan. Here he goes again, and here he goes again, and here he goes again. He is always there waiting. He was in the garden, but his goal is not to be in the garden. His goal is to be in our heart, to control us. That's why we have to have the helmet of salvation. Genesis 3:8. And they heard the sound of Yahweh Elohim walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And Adam and his wife, what'd they do? They went running to him and said, Father, help us, help us, help us. They went and hid from Yahweh. I need you to let that sink in for a minute. This is the same Yahweh that they've known since the beginning. The same Yahweh that actually made that garden for them. The same Yahweh that gave them the direction, that came with them. That, you know what? If there was something for them to eat, Yahweh gave it to them. And this person, because they believed the lie, now becomes the person to hide from, not Satan. Should we not be running and hiding from Satan, not Yahweh? But realize the effects of what's happened. I keep coming back to this one. The prodigal. He goes off. Do we really think when he comes back, all his coverings are the same way he was when he left his father? You don't think he sold most of his clothes? Gave away his armor? And he realized, man, I'm sitting here, I have nothing. There's protection in my father's house. I'll go there. And what happens the minute the father sees him? Let me see. New clothes go on him. New sandal on his feet. New sandals on his feet. He goes from looking like he probably had very little on to looking like a prince in a matter of seconds. Matter of seconds. Listen to Deuteronomy 29, 4 through 5. Yet Yahweh has not given you a heart to perceive and eyes to see and ears to hear to this very day. And I have led you 40 years in the wilderness, and your clothes have not worn out, nor the sandals have not worn out on your feet. 40 years of going through the wilderness, and you didn't even realize that these things have lasted the entire time. Only because he's with us. Because that's what's hard about time. Time has a way of going, look, I got some new sandals. Sandals are so great. You know what? Shoes are a huge blessing until we get used to them. Right? And then all you need is one day of living out here at synagogue where you forgot your shoes in your car and you have to walk across that driveway in your bare feet. And then you try to do it quickly. Oh, right? What kind of blessing are the sandals on our feet? Take them away. You'll see, I promise. Not that that's a personal experience or anything. Now listen to this. I'm getting close to the end. We actually made it, I think. Luke 11, 24 to 26. This actually comes right after binding up the strong man and stealing his armor. When an unclean spirit goes out of a man, he goes through the dry places, seeking rest. And finding none, he says, I will return to my house from which I came. And when he comes, he finds it swept and put in order. Then he goes and takes with him seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter and dwell there, and the last day the man is worse than the first. I said in the past, you don't get to be the master. You only get to choose whom you serve. You may think you're serving yourself, but in the end, you're not. And what is spoken of is this bad habit. This evil spirit is cast out. You could clean up your life going, look, I've got it cleaned up. I'm not doing that habit anymore. Wow. But you know what? If you don't fill that with something, it's going to come back and it's going to come back worse. Go back to anything that's an addiction. If you don't fill your life with something greater than what was that you had to serve, whether that be marijuana, alcohol, doesn't matter, cigarettes, whatever it is, if you don't fill it with something stronger than it, I promise, when you give in the next time, it will have more power over you. Why? Because you walked away, but you couldn't make it. And that will be hanging over your head for the rest of your life. Why should I even try again? I felt like this entire talk was going to be like, oh boy. And we talk about armor as being these specific things. You know what? Psalm 71 is basically clears this whole thing up. Everything about the armor of God is the reality that you have a place that you know you're protected. The armor given is His. It's His shield. The righteousness, guess what? It's His. We didn't earn it. The salvation, it's His. We didn't earn it. Nor the belt, nor the sandals. Listen to Psalm 71, 1 through 3. In you, O Yahweh, I put my trust. Let me never be put to shame. Deliver me into your righteousness and cause me to escape. Incline your ear to me and save me. Be my strong refuge to which I may resort continually. For you have given the commandment to what? To save me, and you are my rock and my fortress. In the end, that armor we had on is Yahweh. Walk away. You can't take the armor with you. It's His. To some degree, binding up the strong man is our sin. When we continue going in sin, binds Yahweh from doing anything other than cursing you until you're ready to turn around. Because the enemy just continues coming at you. I leave you with this one last thought. I know I've said it before. We started off with the Torah portion about the sons of God, the women of men, enmity, separated, great, wonderful. Okay. That became the Nephilim. Right? That would be the sons of the enemies that continue growing, right? Then, Yahweh's seed is David. We see David face one of them in the reality of Goliath. Now what's intriguing is Saul goes, hey David, wear my armor. Now, personal opinion. Everybody hear that? Personal opinion. Saul was afraid of going because the enemy had already gotten into his life. Go back and check. And when he was afraid, guess what? Fear is completely contagious. Every one of those camps. If Saul wasn't going out, we're not going out. But here's the reality. Hey, David, put on my armor. Walk out there in the distance. Fight him for me. Who are the people going to think are fighting Goliath in Saul's armor? Probably Saul. David's like, it doesn't fit. I don't fight like this. It doesn't fit. And you know what? Here's our lesson. He went down to the still waters. He collected a few stones. Stone represent the reality of His word. Stones are what we use against the words of the enemy. He went out against him, even with Goliath yelling at him, and everybody in the camp saying, "You can't do it," including his brothers. And this huge mountain of a man is standing in front of him. Huge armor, sword, shield, everything. And I truly believe that David's sitting there going, "You know what? Yahweh, if I'm meant to die, then I will die for your cause. But only you hold life and death in your hands." And I believe in that moment, because I believe David was scared, he realized that the one on his side was much larger than the one he was facing. "I would much rather face Hasatan than Yahweh." And did you let that sink in a minute? "I would rather face Goliath than Yahweh. Because Yahweh always wins." He's the one on my side, then it doesn't matter. I bring this up that I hope we're not going into another time of battle. When we do, let's be together intercessing for one another to be strong and courageous. To stand out against the enemy, even if he's 10 feet taller than us. Against his lies. And let Yahweh shine and be the God of salvation for the whole world. Baruch Hashem. Yevarecha Yahweh vayishmerecha. Kei Yahweh temendega tepeteha. May Yahweh, may He bless you and keep you. Yisi Yahweh panavelecha vihuneka. Kei Yahweh agas serosto espendeser sobreti ite or toge semendad. May Yahweh's face shine upon you, be gracious to you. Yisi Yahweh, panavidecha, v'yasem lecha shalom. Ki Yahweh muestre su rostro sobre ti ite, concede su paz. May Yahweh's face, when it turns towards you, may He give you His perfect peace. Shabbat shalom.